Because ultimately, it doesn't matter what you do with the numbers. If you're not going towards the vision you are creating for your family, you're not going to feel like you've succeeded.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Get Your Fill, Financial Independence and Long Life, where we explore ways to achieve those two goals, and then we invite great people on to help us. That's why I'm excited that Leo Marte is going to be with us today. Leo runs an investment advisory firm that provides personal CFO services to Christian professionals. He helps them plan for the future, invest their assets, and manage their taxes so that they can honor God and build generational wealth. He is currently residing in North Carolina, where he and his wife are raising two beautiful children with a third on the way. Congratulations. He's a certified financial planner, which is the gold standard of financial planning expertise. Only 28% of advisors in the US have that designation. If you've watched us before, you've heard a little bit about the differences between paying somebody to, you know, to do what you want them to do and versus helping them to meet their own particular benchmarks set by their company, right? Leo, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, thanks, Chris, for having me on your platform. I appreciate the opportunity to join you today.
Great. So first of all, I just want to start out, how did you become interested in this path? Were you always like a money person, always looking to improve your own wealth, or how did you get going?
Well, the beginning of the story is with my mom, who is an accountant and retired now, no longer practicing. But from a very early age, I always had an affinity for numbers. So that's in my nature. You know, it's funny because my son has that same affinity. And, you know, combine that affinity with my mom's profession, I started helping her, keep books and, you know, create balance sheets and all of that at a very early age. And that was my first real exposure to actual money, you know, managing money within nonprofits and businesses and things like that. When I went to college, I actually went to college for a completely different interest because I was also very interested in computers. Okay. So I became a computer developer and I graduated college and I started working at this little unknown company called Vanguard, right?
Wow.
being tongue-in-cheek here, because of course everybody, you know, probably knows what Vanguard is. But I actually backed my way into the financial services industry through IT. I always had that passion for computers, graduated college with that degree, started as a computer developer. And then as I start exploring and learning about the business, about the different client types that Vanguard serves, I realized, oh man, my affinity for numbers is coming back out and in a different way, kind of going back to those accounting roots. And that's where I found my path into financial advice. After spending a couple of years going into different roles in the organization, I started serving clients and primarily high net worth clients from a brokerage standpoint, and then in the fiduciary advice space. And, you know, after building a career in that path, I decided, hey, in 2020, it's time for me to start my own shop and start working with the people that I want to serve.
So this is new. You just started this in 2022? Oh, 2020, you said.
2020.
2020. Yes. Like everyone in the pandemic was like, you know what? I'm throwing out my old business model and I'm starting something else.
Well, it's funny you say that, because although the pandemic was coincidental with the time that I decided to start my own firm, I'd been planning for it for 2 years. And, you know, any entrepreneur that is interested in knowing kind of the level of preparation that you need to start a new venture, please make sure that you have a lot of money saved aside so that when you go start your new journey as an entrepreneur, that you have sufficient money to be able to live on while your business is ramping up. So I spent 2 years just planning, saving, budgeting, making sure that I was financially prepared for that journey so that when I was able to, you know, be able to make that jump, you know, which I didn't know at the time that when the jump would happen. I knew the jump would happen in the future, mm-hmm. But the pandemic offered a few opportunities that I thought were really, really important for me to take advantage of. You know, the first thing is everybody was really confused about what was going on in the markets, and a lot of people needed help. And the pandemic created this renewed interest in investing, you know, name it, stocks, digital assets, you know, people spending more time at home learning, educating themselves. So I felt like it was just a prime opportunity. And besides, you know, there's never a perfect time to do anything, right?
That's for sure.
So you can always wait for the perfect time, for the most comfortable time, and it'll never happen. So I decided to do it when I felt like it was my time to go, and it worked out.
Perfect. Congratulations. And you have to trust the process. I know a lot of entrepreneurs are like, well, I don't know if I have enough money, if I have enough, how am I going to know if I'm going to get, I feel like in some ways you have to be like, all right, how am I going to eat this week? So you've got that drive, you've got that push. Like, if I don't go out and get a new client, if I don't go out and do this thing, I'm just going to be, you know, hungry. So let go of some of that security, right?
Yeah. I mean, and you do want to have some level of security, but to your point, you don't want to rely on that security to rob you from the motivation, right? You want to have enough money to have a runway so that, you know, the first 12, 18 months, maybe even 2 years, you're not constantly fighting the bear. You know, you want to be far away enough from the bear chasing you so that the bear doesn't eat you, right? But you also don't have to save a fortune to start a business. I had a conversation with someone before I started the business, and one of the things that he told me is, you know, Leo, a lot of entrepreneurs don't realize that it's not the business that breaks you and pushes you out. It's usually your home budget that breaks you and pushes you out, right? So entrepreneurs plan everything about the business, got the expenses dialed in, know exactly how I'm going to go get my clients, go ahead and do it. And then they don't have enough of a runway at home to be able to feed themselves and their families, and they're forced to abandon their dream. So I really did not want that to be the case for me. And luckily my wife was on the same page there too. And we made a concerted effort to get ready in that sense.
Excellent. Yeah. It definitely helps if you have the home support.
For sure. I mean, it was critical, because in our case, you know, my wife is a stay-at-home mom, stays home with both of our kids. And as you mentioned, a third on the way. And it was very important for her as, you know, as my partner in this journey, that she felt a certain level of security that we wouldn't be starving while I was getting this business started, of course. But she also challenged me to really think critically around the business plan, right? She was my first pitch. You know, I was showing her my projections and my numbers, and she was testing and pushing and making sure that I really understood the commitment that we were getting into. And I couldn't be more appreciative, because I feel like her involvement made my business plan stronger and more successful.
Fantastic. It's wonderful to have that kind of a partner.
Yes.
Yeah, wonderful. So Leo, how did you choose the niche of a Christian, you know, Christian investors?
Yeah. Well, as I was growing up, you know, I grew up in a Christian home, and I consider myself, more than privileged to have had that experience. Faith has been a big part of my life journey, of my marriage, of my family. And I found myself doing a lot of work around financial planning and Christians as I was teaching Financial Peace University classes in my local church. So I realized that many people in the church don't have this whole money thing figured out, and they were looking for a source of information that was in line with their belief system to help them navigate some of the complexities around money. And as I taught many of those classes over and over again, cueing my wife, you know, she and I had a conversation one evening after finishing one of the classes, and I was just sharing with her how exciting it was for me to walk people through this material. And she said, well, you know, you should think about doing this full time. Like, you should think about making this your job. And it hadn't crossed my mind until that point. Like, you know what? She's right. Like, I would love to be able to work with Christians, helping them figure out their money, manage their assets, figure out their income. I mean, that would be fantastic if I could achieve that. And that's what landed me in this niche within the broader industry of working with people of faith. Now, not all of my clients are people of faith, but most of them have some sort of connection. Maybe they have a parent who is a strong believer, raised them in those ways, and they feel a nice affinity towards the faith walk. And some people are devout Christians who go to church every Sunday, part of a home group, raising their kids in the church too. So we have everything in between. But I think that one of the main things that differentiates my practice is the presence of that value system that changes a little bit the messaging around money management versus what you find in other advisors in the marketplace.
Interesting. So in what way do you think that comes into play? Like, how would a Christian manage their money versus a pagan, for lack of a better term?
Well, I like the term non-Christian or non-believer rather than pagan. But I think it all has to do with the relationship that we have with money. Fundamentally, your relationship with money is going to determine just about every outcome in your life related to financial health. As a believer, I look at money as something that I am a steward of, not the ultimate owner of, right? So because I'm taking care of this wealth, of these resources on God's behalf, God has invited me into this journey to be part of this grand design, this grand plan that he has. I look at my resources differently than if I thought this was all mine, right? And that influences the way in which, you know, I look at my giving, for example, which is kind of the number one thing that people think when they talk about Christians and money. But it also has to do with building a legacy, creating generational wealth, mm-hmm. right? I know that I am just a steward, and my son and my daughter and my next daughter, who's going to be born in the fall, they're going to be stewards after me. So my responsibility is not just to accumulate all of this money and pass it down to them. It's actually pass down the values that are going to help them honor God with that wealth as well. So you see, the perspective of money management is just fundamentally different when you inject a relationship with God into the mix. Now, good financial planning principles apply to everybody, right? Live below your means, invest in a broadly diversified way, keep the cost low. Like, those are all timeless, universal principles. But it's really the values that are under the objective, the end game with your money, that make a difference. And I think people make different decisions along the way when they are operating out of that foundation.
So by different decisions, you mean like different sorts of funds maybe that they would want to invest in and things like that, different ways to actually earn money on their money?
Well, I think that there are a couple of ways that you can break down those decisions, right? There's the decision of what I do with the money, right? So I found that people who have a strong belief of stewardship want to keep consumerism in check. They feel as though, you know, they're kind of in that constant battle of, hey, how much should I invest for the future, give versus spend? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot more questions around that. There are some believers that feel very strongly about the investment vehicles that they want to put their money towards. Of course, that is always going to be a part of the conversation for people who feel strongly about that. But ultimately, is how much time are we spending building the wealth versus developing your family to take the wealth as well? And some of those decisions along the way, it's like, well, how early do we talk to our kids about money? How early do we bring them into the conversation around how this money is being utilized and given? So there's a lot of financial decisions that we make every day, even without thinking about it, that come out of our value system and the way in which we look at money. And those are just a few examples of the conversations I have with my clients.
Yeah. Excellent. It doesn't sound like it's that, you know, the advice I would think would be good for everyone, right? Get your kids involved in understanding money. How many wealthy people have seen their, or maybe not lived to see their entire life's work be squandered by their kids in 5 years or whatever, you know?
We used to have a saying when I was working at Vanguard that, and this is definitely not a Vanguard saying, this is a popular saying, but I learned it as I was helping, you know, kind of helping people and learning about financial planning, is that we go from, you know, from shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves within three generations, right? So, you know, the first generation has a drive, you know, creates the wealth, get something going. The second generation is not quite as driven as the first because they come from a very different starting point, but they may do a very decent job at stewarding and managing that. But without an intentional plan, by the time the third generation comes around, they're so disconnected from what the first generation did that, you know, the motivation, the aspiration, the vocation are just could be completely different from what Gen 1 and Gen 2 created. Yeah. And that's when usually the bad money decisions come, right? That's when you get the, you know, the perhaps what some would call frivolous spending, you know, in the back of a yacht and not working and, you know, crashing sports cars, and, you know, around palm trees, you know, so those things start happening the farther you get away from the value system of the initial generation. Right. And that's why I always tell my clients, passing down money is very easy.
Yeah.
You just have to die. And everybody is going
and we
to
can
die,
all do that.
Right. So it doesn't matter what you think today, Chris, eventually you're going to pass and somebody's going to get your stuff. Whether you create a will or not, whether the courts are involved or not, somebody's going to get what you have. The toughest part of generational wealth is transferring values, because that takes years. Yeah. It starts when kids are very young, and it takes years upon years of training and development to get your family around a singular mission or vision that you have for them. And, you know, so you may think, you know, boy, you know, what do I care after I'm gone? I'm going to be gone. I'm not going to know what happens. Right. But it's not really about us ultimately, because wealth can serve a very constructive purpose or a very destructive purpose. So you certainly don't want to be blamed for, you know, your grandchild's, you know, early demise because they just didn't know how to manage all this wealth and they just, you know, it got to their head and they couldn't control it and it destroyed them.
Yeah.
And that's a really important aspect of generational wealth building that a lot of people miss.
Yeah, for sure. So, I hate when that happens. I had a really good question, but then you started talking about other stuff and then I got involved in what you were saying. Oh, so it sounds like you're really having to not just, you know, work with the parents, for example, to help them invest their money and make wise decisions, but you're almost training the entire family. Do you do that, or you do kind of help the parent to get that whole thing started?
Well, that's where the personal CFO aspect of my work goes. You know, for people who are not familiar with, you know, corporate America, a CFO is a chief financial officer. It's usually the key money strategist in an organization supporting a CEO to make long-term strategic decisions. So when I work with the families that are my clients, I look at them as the CEO of their family. And we start the work setting the foundation, the financial planning aspects that need to be in place before we even talk about the next generation. Because there's a lot of work we need to do to make sure that you're doing what you need to do in this generation before we talk about the next. As we go through that journey, as some of the early financial planning work starts becoming completed, then we start shifting our attention to the family relationships that are present. Right. So sometimes it's young kids, sometimes it's adult kids. Sometimes it's, you know, some of my clients are taking care of nephews or nieces that are not their biological children, but because of unfortunate situations, they've ended up playing that role of guardian or trusted individual to be kind of their parental figure. So as I look at that, at that family map and trying to understand, okay, so what are the needs of each of these individuals? You know, maybe you have kids going to college. Well, how do we help them get started after college? After we solve the college funding problem, what does that transition look like? How can we start training them? When do we bring them in eventually into the money conversation progressively, right? We don't have to open the kimono all the way on day one, but we do have to start building the baby steps for them to come into the fold and have a voice at the table if you expect them to handle this amount of money after you're gone, right? You don't want to wait until you're no longer here to teach them and coach them. You want them to make decisions small scale, low risk decisions along the way so that you can be there to mentor them and help them make those decisions wisely. And that's where the family piece starts coming in. After we get the basic stuff done, that's when we start looking at family and generational wealth. And absolutely, that means individual conversations with the children as well, as adults primarily, where I can help also guide their own financial journey so that they're prepared as individuals to inherit money down the road.
Interesting. So I know it's a challenge for parents when they're trying to get their kids to be, I mean, not all kids, but sometimes a kid, you know, be naturally thinking more about immediate gratification than saving and understanding how money works and things like that. Have you found any tools or toys or tricks that kind of can help children to understand and have a good relationship with money?
Well, I think in the beginning, when I was starting to think about this same question, both for my kids and also for my clients, I did some research around the subject, and the tools and the tricks and the tips really depend on the age group.
Yeah.
So for example, my son right now is about to turn 5 years old. So we used a resource from called Financial Peace Junior, which is made by Dave Ramsey's organization, Financial Peace University. You know, he has a little chore board and, you know, he makes his little commissions for some of the jobs that he does around the house. And then we give him the ability to then choose what he wants to do with that money. You know, we set a framework around, hey, you need to give a little bit of this, you need to save a little bit of it. And then you also have to buy yourself something every week so that you learn to also take the fruit of your labor and enjoy it. And he loves that, right? Like payday is one of his favorite days because he comes in and he's counting his coins. I said, well, can I go get myself some ice cream? Well, you know, you don't have enough money to go get ice cream yet. You need to wait until next week. And that builds patience and builds motivation and delayed gratification.
Yeah.
But not everyone has the privilege of doing that early on in their kids' lives. And maybe you've woken up to the necessity of teaching your kids when you're already older, or maybe they're teenagers or in their 20s. And I think that's where you have to really be delicate around how you do it and the timing of it all, right? Because kids between the ages of, you know, approximately 14, 15 to about the ages of 24, 25 have a biological imperative to detach from you. So if you try to attach to them with all this money stuff at the wrong time, you're going to turn them off and they're just going to walk away. They're going to be repelled, right? Yeah. What you want to do in that stage is help them with the money things that they need to understand: how to pay for college, how to pay for their first car, how to manage their bills, how to manage their first credit card. Like those are the little baby steps that they need to be learning there so that when they, quote unquote, come around and are older and wiser and actually look to you for advice, that's when you start opening those channels and inviting them into the conversation and being a little bit more open about the finances. So it really depends on where you are, depends on where your kids are, depends on the dynamics of your family. If you have a blended family, that's going to look different. If you have a nuclear family versus an extended family situation, that's going to also look different.
Wow. Yeah, Leo, that's wonderful. Certainly I have always wished that my family would have had a more, you know, intentional approach with us kids about money and how it works and what to do with it and stuff like that. I think a lot of parents, they're investing their money with someone in kind of in a vacuum and the kids aren't even aware of it. And I know I have friends who have been left money or left stock or left something that, and they don't know anything about it. And that's just such a shame. And I think probably that's that much worse for women. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that it's like, oh, don't worry, you're a pretty little head about this, honey, because you'll probably have some rich husband, you know, like, yeah. What if I don't? What then what? Yeah. So I know a lot of women of a certain age, you know, 50s and 60s, who are trying to really catch up and figure out what the heck is all this, you know, talk about money and what do we do with it and things like that. And it's wonderful that you're helping people to start at a young age in a very intentional manner.
And not just that, but, you know, women also have certain unique challenges that affect financial planning for them that are perhaps different than the average male in America, right? So, yeah. you know, to begin with, you know, and I speak from personal experience because my wife is staying home now. You know, many women across America who decide to stay home unplug from the workplace for many years. So you are creating a somewhat of an investment gap in workplace retirement plans, for example. Whereas the average male, although that trend is changing, and we're seeing more stay-at-home fathers, by and large, about 70% of homes in America have a male breadwinner associated with the family finances. But with those trends changing and some of the unique challenges that women face, you know, it's becoming more and more important to make sure that both men and women, as they're growing and as they're adults, have access to quality financial planning information. You know, for situations where, for example, you're transferring family wealth, the issue of trust becomes very important, right? Trusts as vehicles to be able to transfer that wealth to protect both men and women from unfortunate divorce situations, yeah, or, you know, creditors and things like that. But let me tell you, some of my favorite clients over time have been women, because, you know, some of these women have not had the access or the equal treatment and the equal opportunity to learn these things. But, oh man, they have found their information and they are strong advocates for themselves. I remember one client that I worked with many, many years ago at Vanguard was a 91-year-old woman who every single day made sure that she checked her stock values, accounted for all of her accounts. She kept handwritten records because, you know, she's from a generation where, you know, computers were not her main way of tracking data. So she kept her own records. And it's just really cool to see, you know, people who've overcome some of those gaps and some of those challenges and have been successful with money. So admirable. But you're absolutely right.
Yeah. And I think women in general, once, like you say, once they get that knowledge, once they get over some maybe initial fear or trepidation, that they tend to be really good with numbers and they really embrace it and they're super at it. But there is that, like, oh, you know, that little bit of, oh, it's scary, you know, kind of thing.
Well, you know, it's funny too, because, you know, women actually, if you look at the data, women tend to be better investors than men are for a number of reasons. But men, stereotypically, and I would say just as a broad generalization, of course, not every man is the same, not every woman is the same, but as a broad generalization, men are a little bit more impatient. We tend to be more aggressive with our investing methodology. We try to squeeze the last ounce of return that we can get, sometimes at the expense of other goals. Whereas, you know, again, on average, the female investor tends to be a little bit more cautious about taking unnecessary risk, more diversified portfolios, more attention to detail in the form of cost and performance over time, you know, better decisions that are not driven by sort of that instinct of, I got to be doing something with my money. I got to move from here. I got to move to there. There's always got to be something moving. And I've found that to be true over time as I've developed relationships with both, you know, male and female clients, that tends to be the case.
Yeah. Interesting. I think there's probably a lot of research out there about the differences between men and women when it comes to money, but I don't know what any of it is, but it's interesting. It is fascinating, like you say. So I am today. So I think we have a good feel for what you're doing today and how you're helping people. Is there anything that you want to fill in about that we didn't talk about sort of your life today, your work?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I'm doing with my practice is, you know, as I mentioned before, my personal involvement with clients is of course limited because of the type of clients that I work with and the types of services that I create for them and for their families. And that's intentional because I came from a practice where, you know, me and my team of 8-9 advisors were managing over 1,000 relationships. And that's just not the direction I wanted to go with this type of service model. So my practice is a lot smaller than, you know, where I came from. But one way in which I'm trying to help people is to look at online education opportunities where people can come in and gain some of that value of what it looks like to work with a financial advisor. But perhaps for those that are either not ready or unable to afford a relationship with an advisor, or maybe don't even have sufficient assets yet to be able to engage in an ongoing investment management relationship, but they still need the principles and they still need that way to get started. And I created these education opportunities for people to be able to do that. So if you'd like us to talk about that, I'd love to sort of go a few layers deeper.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So the first thing that I would encourage all your listeners to do is to look at my Quick Start program. It's a free program available online. You can access it by going to abundantadvisors.com/quickstart. And you know, we'll have these links available in the podcast notes as well, so you can easily find them. But the Quick Start program is a 30-minute video program where I give you an introduction across the principle, the key pillars of financial planning from a biblical perspective. So if you are a person of faith out there and you kind of don't even know where to start and you just want to go and take the first step in a way that's meaningful and helps you in this journey, I would strongly recommend you check out the Quick Start. The Quick Start program is going to take you through those pillars. It's going to give you that introduction, and it's free of cost. If you want to go deeper and learn more about financial planning and create your own financial plan using some DIY tools that I've created and the content we've developed, there's a masterclass that you can also access. It's called How to Build a Christian Financial Plan. Very creative name, by the way, right?
Wow.
You have no idea how long it took me to develop that name. But How to Build a Christian Financial Plan is truly a masterclass. Gives you about 5 hours of video content, templates. You get to peek over the shoulder with me across the multiple tools that I help people understand how to determine your risk, investment risk allocation, how to understand whether you're being paid fairly in the marketplace, your salary benchmarking, developing a budget, what kinds of insurance policies you should have. And also, depending on the level of the masterclass that you purchase, there are also coaching opportunities where we can meet one-on-one and talk about that content and help you along in your journey as well. And you can access the course by going to abundantadvisors.com/course. So those are the two main ways in which you can engage and take the first step today to start your journey of creating a financial plan.
That's fantastic. Because I think a lot of people don't even really know where they are. You know, they might think they're doing pretty good. You know, I'm putting money in my 401k or whatever, and not really understand truly, you know, where they actually are as opposed in regards to retirement, in regards to, you know, what would happen if, you know, you lost your job or something like that. They just don't have that benchmark. They don't have that understanding. So that's a wonderful way to get started. So yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that our time is going really quickly here. So I want to make sure that if there is anything that, you know, you wanted to talk about that I haven't touched on, any questions that you want to answer that I didn't ask yet or anything, that we make sure that we cover those.
Yeah. So that was it for me. Like I really wanted to make sure that your listeners were able to take advantage of this program. You know, this program was developed over the span of a year, you know, with a lot of research, a lot of dedication and tons of love for people to really get started in their finances. And just again, recognizing that my ability to serve people directly is limited because of the structure of my firm, but I still feel a deep passion in helping spread these financial planning principles and their intersection with biblical stewardship. And that's what I hope, if anyone takes anything away from this conversation today, is that there are sources of help out there. And I believe the programs that we put together can really help you get started.
Excellent. So Leo, if someone was going to get started today, so let's say that they've taken your course or they're about to take your course, is there one or two just pieces of advice aside from that, that you would recommend for them, like just to kind of maybe figure out where they are today or to get some kind of a roadmap?
Yeah. So the first thing that I would encourage you to do is, and this kind of walks away from the hard numbers part, but really, really sit down and invest time in thinking, what is your relationship with money and what do you want the outcome of your financial situation to be? It's kind of like creating a vision, mm-hmm. casting a vision for yourself and for your family. Because ultimately, it doesn't matter what you do with the numbers. If you're not going towards the vision you are creating for your family, you're not going to feel like you've succeeded.
Right.
Right. So that's advice number one. Really spend time deciding, where do you want to go? What is the vision you want to cast for your family? The second piece of advice I give people is educate yourself. And don't forget that some of these concepts are very easy and very timeless. Live below your means. Save consistently and in a disciplined way. Invest in a diversified portfolio. Make sure that as you are developing this wealth, you're also taking time to enjoy it. You're taking time to give something away to others that are in need.
Yeah.
Make sure that your life has that level of balance so that when you get to the end of your life, you can look back and say, wow, not only did I build this legacy for my family, I changed a lot of lives along the way.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Excellent. Leo, thank you so much for being with us today. I love talking with you and hearing your, you know, bright enthusiasm, your big smile and your...
Thank you.
And your passion for what you do. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you for having me on your platform, Chris. I really appreciate this opportunity and enjoyed my conversation with you as well.
Awesome. And thank you, listener, for listening. I know you have a choice of, 2 million podcasts that you can listen to. So I'm grateful that you're here and listening to Leo and I today. And again, all of the links to connect with Leo and to take his wonderful courses are going to be in the show notes. So make sure you check those out. And if you know somebody, and I bet you do, who is maybe not where they want to be financially, that maybe you could forward this podcast link to them so that they can hear some wisdom. And remember to be with us next week. Thank you.